Peace be with you. Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Robin Crane. Welcome to this place. This is a home where no revealed truths are promoted and no scripture or human being is accepted as infallible. This is a place for searching for truth. But we are believers. We believe in intellectual freedom. We believe in justice. We believe in compassion and concern for each other and the whole world. We believe in commitment to those ideals which make us caring and active in the struggles for human dignity. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular to those who may be first-time visitors. We welcome you and especially encourage you to join us after worship for coffee and conversation in the worker room. Information about the church is available from a new member desk during coffee hour and from any of the people here gathered. If you're new, just ask us about the church. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. We are glad that you are here, and we hope to see you again on future Sundays. We do have a professionally staffed nursery for infants and young children. The children will stay for the whole service today and until September 25th, which will be our first day of our formal religious education classes. If you'd like to enroll your child or children for religious education for this year, please talk to Joy about how to do that. Joy, right in the middle, this is Joy. At the front, we have a spirit chair, which includes activities for all ages, not just kids. You are invited to go to the spirit chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to your seat. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, peace, justice, and hope. I have a few interesting announcements. Reverend Dawn announces that there will be a joint worship and picnic hosted by Emerson Chapel that will take place in West County. For those of you who might be new to the area, that's across the river. Which way is that? That way. look for information in your newsletter about the specific place and time. Okay, now, remember that our in-gathering is September 18th. That's when we're hoping to get many of the people that we may not have seen during the summer, etc. It will be a dessert and cheese tray gathering. So please bake and or buy goodies to share as we celebrate our fall coming together after a summer of traveling. Dawn also announced that we invite those who would like to be a worship associate to contact Reverend Dawn Fortune. You will be part of a team headed by Reverend Dawn. Their phone numbers and email will be in the order of service. We do have a couple of people whose schedules have changed, so we need to replace them, and it's loads of fun. We now have a recycle can that looks like all our other trash cans, but it has a label on the side that says recyclables. So please do not put any trash in the recycling can, and actually vice versa. Okay, one more. The people who've been working on the fourth Saturday lunches have been meeting as to whether we can, how we can continue that into the future now that summer's over. And as you know, the church has long distributed personal care items to homeless and poor families in the Alton area, and we're the only church that does that. We currently need many products, but most important is toilet paper. If you could bring in toilet paper, it can be left in the entry hall in front of the kitchen area or in the storage room downstairs that's across from Becky's office. But we need quite a bit, and we go through it quickly, and we're trying to build up our reserves so that we can get started on that again in the fall. And as you may know, SNAP benefits and other kind of food benefits for the people that we serve tend to run out at the end of the month. So the end of the month, we need to have good supplies to give them. And SNAP does not cover all those paper products. If you want to contribute other items, be sure they are new, not used, and properly sealed, not open. You can ask Sabrina. There's Sabrina back there, or Mary Johnson. Where's Mary? Or me, if you want to give us anything in addition to toilet paper, but toilet paper is the thing for this month. We are cleaning and sorting projects stored downstairs, and since that room occasionally floods, we really need some shelving to get some things off the floor. So if you happen to have plastic or metal shelving lying around your garage or your house or your basement that you are not using, please consider contributing it to the church. But don't forget the toilet paper. Thank you.
This morning we have invited, not Kevin, Kelvin, up. You have no idea what small miracle that was. To light our chalice. I invite you to join in our words for the chalice lighting. They're printed in your order of service and they should be projected up here on the wall. We light this chalice. Symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark of all creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings every day. Thank you. Each week, on mornings like this, in sanctuaries like this one, all around our nation and the world, Unitarian Universalists gather to share our free and responsible search for truth and meaning, wherever it may lead, as individuals and as a collective whole. I call the divine to make itself known among us this morning in whatever way we recognize it, through intellectual challenge, through the movement of the Holy Spirit, through the companionship of fellow seekers traveling the path together for this hour. May we be cognizant of the holy nature of this hour, this space, this body. It is holy because we make it holy with our presence and our intention to deepen our spiritual lives and our connections with one another and the world in which we live. Come, let us worship together. I invite you now to rise in body or spirit and join in singing our first hymn, number 175 in your gray hymnals, We Celebrate the Web of Life. Seated. As this is my first time here, I am unfamiliar with the tradition. In other places, I know the children have come down front. We seem to be short on space, and we also seem to be short on kids. So I'm not going to make them. I'm not going to make them like one or two of them come down and be on display. That's not fair to them. Anybody who wants to, by all means, can. But I'm certainly not going to do that to poor kid. So our story this morning, we have this wonderful resource with the Unitarian Universalist Association, and it's online, and it's called A Tapestry of Faith, and it's a variety of curricula that are available for all ages that address our seven principles and our traditions. And so this story this morning is called The Grumpy Gecko, and it's adapted. And it's from the Barefoot Book of Earth Tales, which is by Don Casey and Ann Wilson, which is printed by Cambridge by Barefoot Books. So, the story in Africa. In a shady glade, the chief of the jungle slept until Gecko, the tiger who is the chief of the jungle. Lion, he lives on the plain. Jungle is the tiger. And he opens one eye and he says, Gecko, what? Why are you waking me up? It's the middle of the night. I've come to complain, says the gecko. What could Gecko the lizard have to complain about? He spent most of his time lazing around, just sleeping and eating. Even when he was hungry, all he had to do was reach out his tongue and lick up a mosquito, for crying out loud. What has he got to complain about at this hour of the night? What is troubling you, says the tiger? It's the fireflies, said the gecko. All night long they fly around. They're flashing their lights in my eyes. They're keeping me awake, flashing and flickering. I haven't slept in days. Can you make them stop? You're the chief of the jungle. Can't you do that? The tiger said, sure, I'll go talk to him. So he went to find the fireflies, and he walked through the wet paddy fields, and he walked through the jungle, and the night vibrated with all the chirps and croaks and bugs and frogs and all the things that happen in the jungle. And then finally he found the fireflies, and he says, fireflies, the gecko is upset. And he can't sleep because you guys are flashing and blinking all night long. What is going on with this? And they're like, yeah, we have to do that. We do flash our lights all night, but we don't want to disturb anyone. We're just passing on the woodpeckers message, we heard him drumming out a warning. Woodpecker, yes, the woodpecker. Okay, says the tiger, I will go find the woodpecker. And so he walks for a while longer and he finds the woodpecker drumming against a coconut palm. Woodpecker, the tiger said, the fireflies say that you have been rapping and tapping and tapping and rapping and drumming out a warning. Is this true? The woodpecker says, of course. I provide a great service. Clearly, my efforts are not appreciated. He looked down his prodigious beak at the tiger. The beetle rolls manure right across the path. I warn the jungle animals so no one steps in it. Without my drumming, do you have any idea what kind of mess you'd be in? Oh, said the tiger. Well, that's very helpful. Thank you. I'll go talk to the beetle. So it's easy to spot the beetle on the jungle path. In the moonlight, his back was very shiny. It looked like polished metal. And so the tiger got to him. He says, what is this? What is going on? The woodpecker says, you're rolling filthy stuff all over the place. Yep, can't stop, said the beetle, as he rolled a ball of dung right up to the tiger's paw. Water buffalo drops piles of it all over the path. If I don't move some away, there'll be muck everywhere. Excuse me, either way, got to go. Tiger lifted his paw, and the beetle pushed past. Okay, said the tiger. I'll go have a talk with the buffalo. So the tiger found a buffalo asleep in a pool of mud. Buffalo, roared the tiger. Beetle says you've been leaving your manure all over the path. Is this true? Oh, well, yeah, sir, said the buffalo. I leave manure all over the path, sir, but you see, it's helpful. Rain washes holes in the path every afternoon. I leave manure only to fill up the holes so that no one trips and falls. If I didn't, someone might get hurt. I see, said Tiger. This has been a very long night. Well, that's very thoughtful of you, I think. I'll go ahead and see what Rain has to say about all this. So Tiger set off for the Mount Agung, the highest peak on the island and the home of Rain. The tiger climbed and climbed and climbed. He climbed through jungle and through woodland and scrub, and he climbed some more. At last, his claws clattered onto the smooth grass of the mountain peak. He stopped to catch his breath. He looked down the mountain. The sun was coming up. The tiger stared. The jungle spread out for miles around, flamboyant with flowers, wild orchids and climbing lilies, trumpets of violet blue and starbursts of brilliant flame red. The tiger sniffed. He smelled jasmine, lang lang, frangipani. He swiveled his ears. He heard newborn streams trickling and tinkling, and below the jungle, on the green gold steps of the paddy fields, he could just make out the faint flicker and flash of the fireflies. No need to ask why rain rains, Tiger said. He cooled his paws in a stream and watched for a while. He watched the water journey from mountain to sea, sustaining every living thing on its way, even the tiniest mosquito. He plunged his muzzle into the clear, fresh water, and he drank. Then he began the long journey down the mountain and through the forests and jungles and paddies to find Gecko. Remember Gecko? It was dusk by the time he found the lizard again. Well, Gecko demanded, did you talk to the fireflies? They're still flashing and flickering. Didn't you tell them to stop? Gecko, said Tiger. He sat down on his haunches and he spoke very slowly. Listen carefully. The fireflies flash to pass on woodpecker's warning. Woodpecker warns everyone not to step in beetle's dung. Beetle clears up the excess dung left by buffalo. Buffalo leaves manure on the path to fill up the holes made by rain. Rain makes holes in the path as he creates streams and lakes and puddles, puddles where mosquitoes live. Oh, said Gecko. Gecko, what do you eat? Mosquitoes, said Gecko. So, repeated Gecko slowly, yes. If rain stopped raining, yes. Buffalo could stop filling holes, uh-huh. And beetle could stop rolling dung, yes. Woodpecker could stop drumming, mm-hmm. Fireflies could stop flashing, yes, Gecko. But I would have nothing to eat. Exactly, said Tiger. Gecko, everything in this world is connected. Go and live in peace with the fireflies. So Gecko stuck himself upside down underneath the branch of a tree. He closed his eyes and he went to sleep. And the fireflies flickered and flashed. And the tiger snored. The end of that story. And now, this come September, when we change, and I need to say this because this is different than it's been, when we start religious education classes on the 25th, at this point, we will sing the children out. We're not going to do that today because they're not going anywhere. Right? And that would be just kind of weird. So, but just so you know, I'm going to be reminding you of that between now and then so that when that happens, we all won't go, what happened? Okay? So, but now we are going into sharing and stewardship.
The freehold is the sacrament of a free church. We are gathered here by choice and intention, not dogma or threat of damnation. We name this place as our spiritual home, a place where we come to learn and to grow, to be challenged and encouraged to live into the best versions of ourselves. Our church is where we bring our battered souls for healing, our broken hearts for holding, and our gifts for sharing. Without the free offering, this spiritual home would not exist in this beloved form that we celebrate each week. Without its members, the heart of the church would be hollow and dark. Let us consider now how important this religious community is in our lives and in our community. Let us dig deep into our hearts and our resources and give generously to sustain that which sustains us. The offering will now be gratefully received. May it be lovingly given.
I invite you to join in the unison words to dedicate the money. The work of this church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
Beginning next week, you are invited to write your joys and sorrows in a journal that will be placed at the entrance of the sanctuary over here. We will continue to place silent stones of joy and sorrow in our communal bowl of water as before, but many people do really appreciate being able to list their joys and sorrows in a journal. Each week, we take time to recognize our joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. We do this by taking a stone or several stones from the bowls as we enter, or from the bowl that's up here on the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our lives through thought or meditation. We then place the stones in the cleansing waters of this community, which includes a little bit of water collected from our annual water communion. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles that you wish to recognize silently, you are invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow.
I add to the pool those joys and sorrows for those who are not with us this morning, for the unspoken, and for those not yet known to us, but that will be, we keep in our hearts nonetheless. The stones that are offered by the members of this congregation, every time I see a ritual like this, I am moved by how thoughtful and how intentional and how sacred it is for complex, intelligent people to bless a stone and drop it in water with a prayer. For the world in its complex pain this week, for the world around us that struggles with issues of race and violence and economic injustice, for a nation that is split apart by the pain and the fear that is made manifest in our political discourse, we pray for our leaders, that they may remember that they are elected servants. We hold in our hearts those who would seek peace, whether at war or on the streets or at home, where violence too often visits. We pray for those who hunger and thirst, be it for food or for justice or for love. We hold them in our hearts. I invite you now to remain seated and join in singing our meditation hymn, which is number 1009. It'll be in your teal hymnal. It will also be up on the projector. I know that this song is designed as a round, and I trust that there are enough voices here that we will sing it until it is done. And if you know and have the gift of voice to do the fancy up and down parts, by all means, please do that. Turn my microphone off so that we may maintain a holy and prayerful experience. Thank you.
From Walking Toward Morning by Reverend Victoria Safford. At the end of the reading, we will enter into a time of silent reflection and meditation that will be concluded by the sound of a bell. What if there were a universe in which the world was born out of a smallish star, and into that world at some point flew red-winged blackbirds? And into it swam sperm whales, and into it came crocuses, and wind to lift the tiniest hairs on naked arms in spring when you run out to the mailbox. And into it at some point came onions out of the soil, and came Mount Everest, and also the coyote we've been seeing in the woods about a mile from here just after sunrise. In these mornings when the moon is full. The very scent of him makes his brother, our dog, insane with fear and joy and ancient inbred memory. Into that world came animals and elements and plants and imagination, the mind and the mind's eye. If such a universe existed and you noticed it, what would you do? What song would come out of your mouth? What prayer? What praises? What sacred offering? What whirling dance? What religion? And what reverential gesture would you make to greet that world every single day that you were in it?
All around us, we are surrounded by wonder, if we choose to see it. Thursday night, I drove home from a late meeting here to my home in St. Louis as a thunderstorm danced at the edges of the sky all around me. The flashes lit the horizon, throwing the massive canopy of clouds into inky black relief. Just over the bridge into Missouri, I pulled my car over to the side of the road to sit and watch the show. No creative genius employed by the Dream Factory could produce such a display. And wonder can have a darker side. Rarely are things as idyllic as we'd like to imagine them to be. Thunderstorms that light up the night sky can also blow down trees and damage homes. Fields of flowers carry pollen and bugs and things that itch. A handful of sand is a magnificent, magical thing to examine under a magnifying glass, but even a few grains of that same beautiful sand in your sandwich can diminish the pleasure of your beach picnic. In our modern world of high technology, 24-hour news cycles, and all the answers of life's questions accessible in the smartphone in our pockets, our instinct is often to seek simplicity, as Thoreau did, and head into the woods to live simply, and view the wonders of the world through lenses unstained by modern contrivances. Many of us treasure those familiar lines from Henry David Thoreau's Walden. I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I come to die, discover that I had not lived. I did not wish to live what was not life. Living is so dear. Nor did I wish to practice resignation unless it was quite necessary. I wanted to live deep and suck out all the marrow of life, to live so sturdily and Spartan-like as to put to rout all that was not life, to cut a broad swath and shave close, to drive life into a corner and reduce it to its lowest terms, and if it proved to be mean, why then to get the whole and genuine meanness of it and publish its meanness to the world, or if it were sublime, to know it by experience and to be able to give a true account of it in my next excursion. We treasure those words. Many of us know them by heart and can recite them, often with a wistful longing for a simpler, Spartan-like lifestyle of our own. And yet there are some things we ought to know about Thoreau and his life when he wrote those lines. Henry David Thoreau was an overeducated, underemployed friend of Ralph Waldo Emerson. Unable to find work to his liking, he made a subsistence living doing odd jobs and tutoring the Emerson children in the early suburbs outside of Boston. He did retreat eventually to the cabin he built for himself at the edge of Walden Pond, but his life was not nearly as Spartan-like as he tends to describe. He was a regular visit for Sunday dinner at the Emerson's table, where he ate voraciously and took back provisions to his cabin each week, including pie. His mother did his laundry so that he could live simply and write essays in the woods. The rest of Thoreau's essay on civil disobedience and his time at Walden carries a tone of haughty superiority as he judged harshly those who chose to live in comfortable homes, purchase goods at the local market, and participate in civil society. His affected asceticism rendered him, in his mind, superior as a moral being to others. For all his descriptions of appreciating the simple wonders of nature and humble living, he was really kind of a pompous jerk. And yet, Thoreau's description of the natural world inspired generations of transcendentalists and changed the shape of theology in America. Now, I grew up in New England. I know Walden. Where I grew up, nature's most powerful brute efforts were often on display during late summer hurricanes that travel up the eastern seaboard, or, my favorite, their nastier winter cousins, the nor'easter. Nor'easters, for those who are not familiar with the term, are snowstorms that move generally from west to east and from south to north, sometimes coming across the Midwest or the Great Lakes, and sometimes coming up from the tropics along the eastern seaboard. Sometimes they come across the Appalachian Hills. They always, always end up in Maine and the Canadian Maritime provinces of New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and Prince Edward Island. The storms move north by east, yes, but they swirl in a counterclockwise direction like a hurricane. So they spin out over the sea and pick up moisture, and then return over the land and give it back with enthusiasm and vigor. So the storms move northeast, but the wind from them also comes out of the northeast, so it is chilled when it arrives. When I lived in Bar Harbor, Maine for several years, I experienced the brutal wonder that is a nor'easter headed towards the Maritimes. For those who don't know, Bar Harbor is actually on an island on the coast of Maine. There's a bridge, but it's still an island. And Bar Harbor is interspersed. It is has very porous boundaries with Acadia National Park, which is a magnificent place. So when the wind comes screaming in off Frenchman's Bay, laden with snow and sleet and freezing rain, and ice pellets hit your face, and the snow drives against the windows of the house, and it goes ting, 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 ting on the windows, on the glass, it is a beautiful phenomenon, best observed from the warmer side of that glass. Sometimes at the height of a storm, driven more by wonder than common sense, I would drive my old truck down to a place called Seawall in Southwest Harbor to watch the ocean pound against the rocky shore. Not all oceanfront property is sandy beach. In Maine, there are almost 3,500 miles of coastline with inlets, outlets, peninsulas, and coastal islands. Of those 3,500 miles of coastline, 12 have sand. The rest are made up of rocks of various size and stubbornness. As the wind churns up the waves ahead of the driving snow, the surf turns green and white, and this froth that looks like water in a washing machine on the agitate cycle. The waves crash together and fall apart, and they create giant peaks of spray and deep troughs of this gray-green cold from which no air-breathing thing could ever emerge alive. Ducks and gulls and waterfowl days earlier retreat to the sheltered waters of inland bays and rivers, occasionally taking residence in the high school football field. They tuck safely into the bushes and fields along the shore until the storm abates. I remember one storm when I drove along the Park Loop Road in Acadia National Park. The road, in the wintertime, there's no gate fee, so the locals can go anywhere we wanted in the park without having to pay the $20. So this road is high above the normal high tide mark, which is some 60, and it's like 60 or 70 feet up a granite cliff, and then back from the edge of that cliff, probably another 60 or 70 feet, that's where the road is. And the ocean that day was higher than I've ever seen it. We learned on the coast that with a full moon, the tide comes up higher. than it does at other times of the month. And so I have a feeling that it might have been a full moon and a storm surge. And so the ocean was right up to the edge of that cliff. And I rolled down, all right, this wasn't smart. I rolled down the window of my truck to smell the salt air. And I got hit in the face with spray. The next day, the inside of the passenger window was streaked with salt. There is something about nature that reduces us to a more humble state than we often care to admit. We like to think that we are in charge of things, important things even, but when a storm hits, when the wind blows and the waters rise, we gain a renewed clarity about the true extent of our power in this world. Now, I am a professional cynic. Before I ever considered ministry as a calling, and I still wonder some days, I worked as a newspaper reporter and as a political hack. I covered police reports and court cases and political races and small town politics, where I saw some of the meanest and most petty behavior I have ever seen from adults who are not related to one another by blood or marriage. As a political activist, I made phone calls, got death threats, fought against groups designated by the Southern Poverty Law Center as hate groups, and got prayed at and spit upon by people who declared themselves to be upright, church-going Christians. At one point in my younger years, I worked as a case aide for Maine's Bureau of Child Protective Services. In that job, I supervised visits between foster children and their families of origin, families that had treated their children in such a way that the state of Maine determined that the children had a better chance of surviving, not thriving, but surviving, if the kids were in foster care. It was my job to monitor the visits so that the parents did not pressure the children not to testify in court, or so that the parents would not beat or otherwise abuse the children during the visit. I have seen some of the very worst that people can be to one another. I know the depths of cruelty people will visit upon their closest family members. I have seen hate in the eyes of parents, and anguish on the faces of children. And yet we live in a beautiful world. Wonder remains. Miracles happen. People are brave in remarkable ways. A glimmer flashed across my news feed this week when I learned that Colin Kaepernick, who's here, a football fan? Thank you, Kaepernick. He's the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. I'm a Patriots fan, I don't really care. But what he did was amazing. He refused to stand for the national anthem during a preseason game. And it's not the first time he's done it, although this week is the first time he made the news about it. He refused to stand, and he issued a statement when asked about it. He said, "I refuse to stand to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color." The world is still beautiful, despite or perhaps because of its imperfections. Certainly the quarterback of a National Football League team lives in a world of some pretty rarefied privilege. But Kaepernick is willing to risk his own comfort to raise awareness of the oppression of others. And that is grace. I think we are too quick to dismiss an author when we learn that they have feet of clay. Thoreau was kind of a jerk, but his observations of the natural world and his transcendent experiences were not rendered invalid because of his character flaws. None of us is defined entirely by the best or worst thing we've ever done. We are complex, complicated people, We have inherent worth and dignity, yes, and we are imperfect enough that we need to be reminded sometimes that we have inherent worth and dignity. We need to be reminded that others have worth and dignity as well, that even the meanest among us is worthy of the love of the divine, and that all are deserving of mercy and grace. And it is there. It is there in the roots and foundations of our universalist heritage. That is where I find the wonder that can overpower my skepticism, because I am a skeptic. This unlikely, unruly, perhaps ill-advised, bone-deep belief, this knowledge that all people have some good in them, no matter what, for me, I found wonder in the natural world and in the resiliency of the human spirit and its capacity for grace. Our world is a complex place filled with complex humans. To engage in wonder in such a world is a spiritual practice of its own. It takes intention, patience, and a willingness to offer grace to the imperfect world, and to each other, and to ourselves. May we remember to do that today. May we remember to do that tomorrow. May we remember to do that every day. That is my prayer. May it be so. Blessed be. I invite you now to stand in body or spirit and join in singing our final hymn, number 1053 in your teal hymnal, How Could Anyone Ever Tell You? Extinguish our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Let us go forth from this place refreshed in spirit, deepened in our conviction, inspired by our compassion to love and serve the world and its people. The service begins when the service ends. We go in peace. And I am told that